You don't deserve to make amends to anyone. The only thing that you deserve is a life full of suffering and shame.
You don't own me.
You good?
Yeah, good.
Welcome to Eyes on Gilead, our weekly podcast dedicated to The Handmaid's Tale. There is a lot going on in this show, and we think it helps to talk it out after every episode. I'm Fiona Williams, and I manage our online coverage of movies and TV here at SBS, and I'm joined by my colleagues and fellow resistors, Natalie Handley, Managing Editor of SBS Voices.
Hello.
Heidi Ireland, Channel Manager of SBS On Demand.
Hi.
And Sana Kadar, who, as well as being host of All in the Mind for ABC Radio National, is our proud Canadian on the show.
Hello,
hello,
I am.
Sana.
This was amazing to see her, yeah, in Canada. How long have we waited for this? So, yes, feeling very proud to be Canadian.
Excellent. So, we have just watched episode 7 of season 4 of The Handmaid's Tale, and it is called Home. It's written by Yalin Chang and directed by Richard Shepherd. June struggles with her newfound freedom.
I've been living in Gilead and all I want is culture shock.
Reuniting with loved ones.
You made it. Brace up and be, you made it.
And confronting her nemesis, Serena.
Do you understand me?
And a lot more besides, but yes, we'll keep it at that. Oof. All right. Well, we've recovered from our emotional meltdowns.
Have we?
I don't know.
Yeah. A different kind of emotional meltdown this episode.
Yeah, this episode got me even more than the last one. I was so much more upset watching this one than I was watching episode 7. And I don't know about the rest of you, It was coming at me from all different angles. You know, I was heartbroken about Luke so many times. Yeah. And then it was just bone-chilling at other moments. And yeah, I was crying multiple times.
I wasn't sobbing the whole way through as with the last one, but yeah, a few tears here and there for me.
Well, we did have a moment this week where I knew it was going to be a big one for you, Heidi, because you entered the group chat. You were like, I've seen the episode and I have a lot to say. And I'm just like, oh my God.
Unprecedented.
I always have a lot to say when Serena's on the screen.
Right.
Oof, all right, well, we're going to get to that. Let's do our quick standout moments, big or small. What do we got? Sana, let's start with you.
Okay, I think I'm going to go to June saying, do you understand me? Yelling that line back to Serena all those years after Serena said that to her. That was a full circle moment, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So much anger, so much bound up in that. Yeah. I think that'll have to be my standout this episode.
It's a good one. Heidi, how about you?
I also chose a full circle moment, but mine was June's monologue at the end of the episode, which was ostensibly about Serena, but the slow revelation that it was perhaps about someone else, oh, that just destroyed me. And, you know, we can get into that a little bit more later.
Nice sizzle. Nat, what about you?
Heaps of highlights, actually. A lot to choose from. So I'm going to choose something which I think is probably going to stay with me in a nice way, which is Moira's emotional growth. Look at her going after love. Like, I was actually really proud of her.
Honey Dripper, like, she knows what to say. That was such the most romantic line that she said to Una to try and woo her back. It was amazing. Oh, so perfect. Heartfelt. Yeah. Ma. Mine was also a good one. The fact that June's reunion with Nicole, it was Emily who handed her back. Like, it was that for everyone who was pissed off at the end of season 2 and the why would you hand her over? Emily got to hand her back. And yeah, I had a little cry at that. Thought it was beautiful. All right. Well, I exhaled then. It literally opens with June exhaling. You see her breath in the air. So yeah, I didn't mean that. But yes, again, it literally opens at the end of the last episode. And June says everything she needs to say to get entry into Canada, ably willed on by Luke and Moira. We see Tuello, Mr. Treason and Coconuts, pops up with Rachel Apping, who we've seen a little bit. So, yeah, they're a tag team representing America. And in song choices, what else are you going to play but At Last? Yeah, very nice, as June makes this very strange journey back.
Yeah, and journey through the opulence of the Royal York Hotel in Toronto and you know, all the flowers and the alcohol on offer and all the food and the abundance, which there was abundance in Gilead, but it was always for the commanders, right? Like, I remember that gathering, I think, at Lawrence's house in one of the previous seasons where the dining table was overflowing with food, but none of it for the handmaids. And so now to see all of this for her is jarring and something she's clearly still wrapping her head around.
Yeah, I was getting just haunting flashbacks to some of those Jezebel scenes as they were walking through this plush hotel for the, you know, high-profile asylum seekers. There were, like, that shot of the plate of fruit and cheeses. It was like a Renaissance still life, you know. Everything was so lush. And
yeah. I was getting Jezebel flashbacks with that as well. Yeah. And I thought, is it just me? So I'm so glad that you have said that. And I thought, am I ever going to look at a hotel the same way again? Oh, my gosh, that was ruined me.
Yeah, well, I'm in quarantine as well. Like, it's like hotels. Yeah. Hotels are not having a good time.
But she was also, this was basically her being shuttled into a quarantine for a couple of days, right? They were like, we're going to keep you here for a couple of days to debrief and all the rest. And I was like, is this a nod to COVID?
I thought so too.
But I think there is also this, they're playing with the switching of power, you know, Jezebel's are the holds of power of the commanders in Gilead, and now she's in sort of this place of power in Canada now.
Yeah. Also, the colours are just firing off in these scenes as well.
Oh,
I mean, it's just like, there's the maroon, there's the blue, there's the robe. Come on.
That made me jump when she came out of the bathroom wearing that robe, because I was like, you know, that was a total flashback to in the before time, or not even the before times in Gilead, where, you know, she was ritually bathed before the ceremony, right? We would see her in the bath and then emerge in her red handmaid's robes and then go off and have that horrible experience. So to see her to come out of the bathroom wearing that red robe was like, whoa, this is too close to what we've been through. What is happening?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought, where's a white waffle?
When does a hotel have a red robe? They're always white.
You know, and everyone, Luke and Moira, they're on their best behaviour. They're so excited and trying to talk up the fancy water. And it's like, that's not really what's on her mind at the moment. But yeah, also Luke's giving her space. And
Luke is doing everything right in this episode. When he sits down on the bed and the first thing he says is to apologise to her and say the exact same things to her that are going through her head around Hannah, you know, apologising for not getting her and not being able to do anything.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was beautiful, and so well acted as well. We were right in that scene with them, weren't we? And, you know, the fact that all that was on her mind last week was her fears and regret and guilt, and, you know, that's all that's been on his too, and he gets to say it, but she's not aware of it, and just the way she looks at him in a lot of scenes in this episode,
Yeah, that scene left me in awe of what actors can do, definitely. OT was incredible in that. I mean, last week I talked about how I was annoyed about this dynamic that was emerging where June is just pining for his approval and apologizing endlessly and feeling guilt. And actually what really annoyed me there was not so much her saying all that, but Luke saying nothing in response, like counter narrative, right? And here we really needed to hear him say that, and she needed to hear him say that. But what was interesting in that scene is she's still playing the protector role, right? Like, she still goes in and lies about, she's telling the truth about that meeting with Hannah, but that's not her most recent meeting with Hannah, is it? Mm. And so she still can't shed that role where she needs to protect everyone around her, which, you know, is going to be her undoing, I think.
Yeah. So, well, that is actually so interesting, isn't it? How she told him what he needed to hear with Hannah, and nothing she said was wrong either. Yeah. Like, it is exactly what happened, and it is what she said. It is what Hannah said to her, and it is what June said back to Hannah. But she's doing him such a kindness. And I just think, what she's gone through, can someone else handle that? You know, like, there might be a real risk that Luke is amazing. But, like, once she goes through everything, you know, everything that's happened, like, that actually might be too much for someone else to carry, you know? So I think she's got to figure that out.
Yeah. And also, can she talk about it yet? Like, she said it to Moira last week, so it is fresh, but also, is she ready to tell him as well? Like, it was this was their time. They'll probably get to that.
There was a funny moment at the end of that scene where she recounts her interaction with Hannah, where we were shown these flashbacks of the most recent interaction. And I kind of reacted going, oh, that's a little heavy-handed. They don't need to remind us about the last meeting with Hannah. It was only a few episodes ago. Like, we're not stupid. We get the undercurrent that she hasn't told him about this. But then as the episode went on and we went to the supermarket with her and she has the panic attack and we see the flashbacks coming back in the same way, I realized this is the show kind of showing us the flashbacks that are affecting her.
Where her mind's at. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, where her mind's at. So those flashbacks of Hannah aren't there for us. They're there to illustrate her internal world. And I think you're right, Fiona, that she isn't ready to talk about this necessarily. And that's why those shots are shown to us but not spoken.
Yeah. One thing I love in this episode, the flashbacks are of Gilead now. Like, you know, that's the past.
Yeah.
You know, the immediate past.
Yeah.
That's not to say she won't be back there or who knows, but yeah, you know, like we're used to the flashbacks being the happy times and now that's flipped. Yeah. I love that Yelin Chang has written this one because it references her own episode, The Lakeside. She wrote that interaction with Hannah. So it's nodding. There's so much conversation between the episodes in this show that I love. Makes a whole lot of homework for us, but it's amazing and it just adds to the whole joy of watching this. And to accompany this episode, because Yelin Chang has written so many of the great episodes, we actually have an interview with her that's dropping simultaneously. So you can listen to us recap it, but then you can listen to the person who wrote the episode. So that is waiting for you in your feed at the moment as well as a special treat. I love that Luke also mentions in that scene, you know, that when she used to do really long sleeps, she'd wake up as if she'd achieved something. Sort of like she has.
Yeah. Yeah.
She slept for 17 hours, but also she's achieved a lot over those 7.5 years as well. So I do like we see her sleeping and waking up a lot in this episode. And then she's helping Tuello with the debrief, talking about the kidnappers and very specific detail being really helpful. And his concern is that he doesn't really want to let her go because she might lose that and start to have compromised memories, which we'll get to the end of the episode because she kind of does. I think you had a point. But anyway, but, you know, Luke stands up and says, no,
we can be
she did see her baby, basically. So then we get that amazing reunion with Nicole as we discussed.
Did you notice Luke didn't say she needs to see her baby?
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct. He referred to Nicole as our baby.
We can debrief later at the embassy. Right now I'm going to take my wife home. I'm going to go see our daughter.
Which is so sweet.
I noticed that. Yeah. Oh,
we need
so
to go home
nice.
And see our baby.
That was like such a great moment for him. He was like standing up for his wife, like, I'm taking my wife home. And I just thought, yeah, you are.
You go, Luke.
You fight for her.
yeah, good pick up there, Heidi.
But it's all a bit weird, isn't it? So she's very much entering into Luke and Moira's house. And Moira is very much assume the mum role, like, you know, we see at the grocery store afterwards, she's got to get the nappy changed and she's got to put her to bed. Like, June is very much the sort of floating person that's entered the space and no one really knows where she fits quite yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, her attachment to Nicole is a slow burn right now. Obviously, she loves her very much, but she's not stepped into the mumming role quite yet. But it was weird seeing her enter that space because none of them know properly how to fit her in either.
No, and like they're thrilled to have her back, but also and probably being hyper normal to like show her, you know, it's going to be great. But Moira's telling at the end of every interaction saying, you know, I love you to Luke, which
yes!
is great and wonderful. And life is short. It's not that kind of love, obviously, but like it's, you know, they are a unit. And June nods to that, talking to baby Nicole in that beautiful scene where, you know, Luke and Moira are raising you and mentions your first daddy.
It was quite oh, my gosh. Okay, sorry. Yes.
Oh, God. And with it.
That was beautiful. Yeah. Odd in a way, like a little jarring but also great. But I was going to say it was so nice to see Moira and Luke's relationship because in the previous episode we saw how much Moira didn't really like Luke.
Yeah.
And how she wasn't really on board with their relationship.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of like nice to see their relationship this time and see how far they've come and, you know, and see how much she actually does think of Luke, you know.
Yeah.
A lot. And so I just said, Heidi, he's amazing in this episode. Like he's actually meant to be. But yeah, I did appreciate that Nick got a little nod.
On that your first daddy line, I think this episode is setting up the tension that's sort of going to continue for the rest of the season that, you know, potentially June is too far fucked up now for this relationship with Luke for her to, you know, reconnect with Luke. Whereas Nick gets her in that they have been in this horrible world together and they forged their connection through that, right? So he understands the new fucked up June. Whereas Luke, it's beyond him. He's been, because I think we get the clue that she's been in Gilead 7 years in the grocery store. Like that is a long time and a lot has changed. And of course we would hope that they could reconnect and be their, you know, support system for each other. But is she too far gone?
Mm. I really want her to come back to this, and my fear, because I don't trust this show and what they're doing to us. And so when she was like, when the three of them were in the kitchen and she was just sort of watching Luke and Moira do their morning routine, and I thought, oh, she's not really involved in this. She's just watching it. Mm. And I thought, I know you, June. You better not watch this and think, they've got this. I'm now going to go do something else.
I know.
It's like, you can't do that. So she didn't quite get there in this episode, did she? So we're still waiting for that further integration.
Yeah. It's the Handmaid's Tale. Like, it's not setting up a happy homemaker story from now on in. So, yeah.
Yeah. And definitely the big question posed by this episode is, how fucked up is June?
Yeah.
And I think the answer is quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Quite a bit. Mm-hmm.
I did enjoy watching how naturally she did re-engage with Nicole, even though she still is kind of standing back a bit and letting Moira and Luke take the lead in the kind of parenting department, that she did have that immediate bond again with Nicole, because I was worried that that would be a tricky relationship for her to rekindle as well.
Mm. Yeah, no, that was a gorgeous scene. And from that, we immediately go to that scene with Serena praying aloud.
Thank you for
very performatively. I think she's well aware that Tuello's at the door.
Oh, right, okay.
And there's a lot of prickly interactions in this scene. I love it when she says, you're punchy, because so many people are. His line to get back at her is good.
Does it satisfy you to hear someone from Gilead express misgivings?
Does it satisfy you to express them?
It was. I love that. That was my laugh out loud moment.
Yeah.
Loved it. Burn.
Boom. which is great. And that, you know, she lets on that she's well aware that June's back now. But this scene bothered me a bit because Tuello.
Mm.
What is his story? He's the one that gets Fred and Serena sort of back together. He's the one sort of, he's saying he leaves the legal stuff to the lawyers. And he could have just left it there. But then he advocates for Fred, and Serena rightly calls him a pot stirrer because he is. And, he just sort of gives her a nudge.
He does push them back together, but in the interest of having Serena, you know, play Fred, not for them to be bonded together as a unit.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's going to quite go like that now that Serena's realised June hates her, which what else did she think June was going to feel towards her?
Yeah.
So I definitely think, you know, his hope of her trying to play Fred by being with Fred is going to backfire on Tuello.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I just don't think he played the long game in having that conversation, because he's thinking about the strategy and what the benefit for the case and da-da-da-da, but yeah. Mate, you've been around these people.
I was really wondering about that too, because he hasn't seen June before. He's heard about June, but he hasn't seen her. Mm. And we don't know the full sort of accounts that he's heard from everyone else that's come back from Gilead. But June is the one that's had the most contact with Serena. She's the one that's got the most dirt on her. I'm sure Rita had actually quite a lot as well. But I think Tuello's had a lot of interaction with Serena, and she really plays on that really sort of innocence vibe that she likes to give off, you know, and especially now that she's pregnant. And so I feel like he might have been she's been trying to charm him or something, and he has seen that side of her. And then here's June just saying everything that like Serena has done. So I quite liked how it basically Tuello went from a meeting with June and then straight to a meeting with Serena where he had that really testy exchange. Mm-hmm. And so, but I'm left as well going, yeah, does he, like, I'm assuming, I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt, which you don't want to give men in this show, but like, that he has read a lot and seen a lot and heard a lot and that he knows exactly which strings he's pulling.
Yeah.
But I wish I knew what they were. Like, yeah. Let me in.
Yeah.
I know.
I'm not implying like he's a double agent or anything like that. It's more just, you know, just zip it, mate.
I think he's a bit naive to Serena in a way, right? Like, I think he's inclined to see the women who have come from Gilead as victims, as they mostly are. But he's naive to Serena's, you know, her agency in what happened in a way and what she's still capable of potentially doing.
Yeah, the line at the start of the scene maybe suggests not. Like, he knows enough to know she's like that. But yeah, true.
Maybe,
he probably does give us
He knows the strength in Serena's case is in her being separate to Fred and being a victim of Fred. So in trying to get her to reunite with Fred, I'm sure he sees that as a stronger case to condemn both of them together. Mm. If they're a pair, then her argument that she, you know, is a victim of Fred kind of falls apart.
Yeah.
So I can see
I can see him acting with that as his motive.
Okay. I hope he's playing the long game.
Yes, thank you for explaining that for me, because I'm like, I don't really understand how this works. And I was so confused.
And so immediately as he says, it could help the both of us, she's off to see Fred in a shot. Next scene, there she is. Hi, Fred. And I love this scene and how it pairs with the June one. Yeah, playing with all the shapes and the angles. And Serena's being punchy.
Isn't she? Back off, Fred. And I love also that she called him a sperm donor, I think, in the scene beforehand with Dwella. Yep. How good is that?
Yeah, and he's trotting out the biblical passages and the phony religiosity.
He's so annoying. Shut up, Fred.
Yeah, exactly.
Can we get that on a t-shirt?
Isn't that pretty much exactly what Serena says to him too?
I think it's back off, Fred. Yeah.
Exactly.
So that's a great scene that then, of course, sets up the mirror of that with June about, 15 minutes later. Yeah. Nice try, Fred, but she needs a jolt.
Fiona, you mentioned just a minute ago that the angles in the background of this scene, and I really noticed that in this episode as well, and there's been stripes and crosses in the background of Fred and Serena's scenes in Canada, you know, since they got there. And in this episode, I really noticed that coming to the forefront alongside the circle symbolism around June. Mm. And I don't know if anyone else noticed this.
What were the circle symbolisms? Tell me that.
There's crosses and stripes and lines in the background of all the Serena and Fred scenes, particularly the Serena ones. And there's this circle symbolism that I've seen emerging around June. And obviously circles have been associated with the Handmaids from, you know, day one.
time immemorial.
And that has followed June through. And there's so many scenes in this episode where she's, you know, bowls and citrus and coffee cups and, you know, circular lights arranged around her. And it's this like noughts and crosses symbolism coming out. And it's really, I really noticed it in this episode.
When she's just got to the hotel and Tuella's talking, we still got the song and you hear sort of the smaller dialogue that she's zoned out from. She looks out the window and that's kind of a cross symbol. But then there's all the boxes of the windows of the building opposite. Mm-hmm. I thought maybe it's like she's compartmentalizing everything and it's just kind of she's having to face it all. But it's very boxy, stripey.
The scene that cemented the symbolism as an intentional thing for me is when she summons Tuello to go and see Serena in the middle of the night. Yeah. And we get that crane shot of his car pulling up in the driveway. And on one side of it are the striped lines of the car park. Yeah. And on the other side are these sort of circular lines of like the gardens.
Yeah. Mm.
And June sort of crossing them to get into this car to kind of make her way to see Serena.
Yeah, that was a great shot. Mm.
I was also noticing so much was shot through doorways and she's closing doors and people are coming indoors, like in a sense sort of illustrating how detached she is still from Luke and everything that's happening around her. Like she locks the door in the bathroom, right, when she goes in and it's only Luke out there.
But also she's had no privacy for this.
Well, exactly. But in that hotel room, she's also like surrounded by flowers everywhere. There's flowers in the paintings, there's flowers on the pillow, on the couch, there's flowers actually on the tables everywhere. So that's something I noticed in the set design as well.
Mm. So coming out of that Serena Fred scene, that's where June wakes up and Moira's going to leave she and Luke alone, but clearly June's not ready for that yet. So let's go to the shops. She's been in Gilead. All I've wanted is culture shock. So,
But also I was like, how would you think it's a good idea to take Nicole away from her? She wants to be around Nicole, you know, keep Nicole around. What are you guys talking about?
Yeah.
But that shop scene, my God, she's really unraveling. Hey, like there is a lot of symptoms and signs of PTSD emerging. I ended up looking up the Beyond Blue sort of symptom checklist for PTSD. Right. And she's, you know, she's exhibiting a lot of them. It's probably too early to, you know, say she has PTSD, but, you know, the intrusive flashbacks. She's also on alert and on edge a lot. Like there's that one point that Luke comes over to her and she kind of jumps a little bit. Mm-hmm. She's having trouble sleeping. You know, she's feeling a lot of anger. There's a lot going on for poor June.
Yeah. And she thinks she sees Alma and has the panic attack by the dairy fridge.
By the milk.
You didn't notice
yes.
that?
Yeah. Oh, goodness.
The whole layout of the supermarket is very similar to Loaves and Fishes. Even when they walk in and there's all that kind of fruit stacked up, I was getting Loaves and Fishes flashbacks.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, but yeah, the emptiness of Loaves and Fishes yeah. versus mm-hmm. the abundance mm-hmm. of Longo's, which, by the way, is a real chain that I have shopped at in Canada. I was like, oh, this feels like home.
Well, yeah. I think if I had my own little bingo card of all the things that I wanted to see when June comes back to Canada, and I was like, going to the supermarket was actually one of them. It yeah, was yeah. so great because it was such a huge part of the handmaids' lives, you know, that was like their one outing of the day. So as soon as they were going to the supermarket, I was like, yes.
Yeah. But also, isn't this like, God, this is so funny. Through the pandemic and the lockdown, for how many of us was the grocery shop the one outing we had a day and the one like sort of bit of social yeah. connection? And that's how it was for the Handmaids in Gilead, and that's how it sort of is for June right now.
Yeah.
It's touching on a lot of that.
And also, back when I used to travel places, like internationally, I love going to yeah. the supermarket, you know, seeing all the different,
yep.
mm-hmm. everything that's on display.
Seeing how chips have just transformed in 7 years.
How chips transformed? I was like, what do you mean, June? Explain more. How have chips changed in 7 years?
A lot healthier options.
I'm pretty sure you couldn't buy beetroot chips. Seven years
yeah.
ago.
Yeah, there's right. a quinoa there too. Yeah, and I was thinking milk's changed. Like, you got your oat and your almond. Yeah. And, yeah. Like, also in there, she, you know, she notices women and girls and living free lives, being mothers and daughters and couples. And yeah, it all comes crashing down, especially with the weird water logo.
Yeah. Is that actually like a Gilead imported water? Is that one of their like trade things that they do? Oh. Or was that just a coincidence that the logo happened to match some
yeah,
of that?
Yeah, don't know. But yeah, not a real brand otherwise. Their product placement. Yeah, we're in Handmaid. Oh, shit, we're in Handmaids. But in that panic attack, we see that is the greatest hits of all of the abuse of yeah. these years. Love the editing and the yeah. sound design of that mm. scene. It was all in there.
A great little reminder too for us as the audience of things like that scene with Serena mm-hmm. screaming at yep. June mm. from a couple of seasons ago.
Yeah, that was back in season one, wasn't it?
I think so, yeah.
When she thought she was pregnant and then wasn't.
God, I felt that all again, right? Like yeah. you felt that tension, mm. you felt that fear. They were really effective flashbacks.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they do a good flashback in this show.
They know how to do flashbacks.
And then the dinner, the reunion, Rita, the Rita moment. Rita. Yeah, all the girls.
Did like Luke have a line about how Rita's got to bake?
Something? Yes, muffins. Rita's making muffins and Emily's baking, everyone's baking. That was nice.
That's right. Yeah, Emily's making the banana bread, I think it was.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was great. But then they get to catch up over drinks and just decompress.
How great was this scene?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very great.
It was just so great to see, you know, the support network mm. that June has coming into Canada now that Moira and Luke didn't have and Emily didn't have. And now that support group is there for her.
And I love that Moira said, none of that Aunt Lydia shit here. You know, like Fiona, I think you called that out last week when I was like, why is she feeling like she's responsible for everything? You're like, that's Aunt Lydia. Mm. And that's exactly Aunt Lydia. And Moira calls that out. And I thought that was great. No Aunt Lydia here.
Yeah. And in the dialogue, you know, like Luke is very, I'm sorry, it's my fault. Like mm-hmm. that language is repeated so often across this, like that it just finds ways in. Yeah. But yeah, Moira's like, nah, not having it.
And interesting sort of hearing Emily talk about yes. her relationship and how she's going in terms of, you know, not having moved into the bedroom yet. Because I wonder how everyone's coping in every aspect of their life, you know, having yeah. to readjust to life in Canada. So that was interesting to hear how she's going.
Yeah. And, you know, Emily has, of course, had got,
yeah.
you know, physical scars from, you know, far more intensive surgeries there.
And, of course, Moira makes that comment about how Gilead has made them all fucked up about sex,
yeah.
which we then see
oh yeah,
oh,
happen
God.
With
yeah.
June later in the episode. Mm. But the moment that really got me in this sort of dinner scene is when they start talking about Serena's pregnancy and the fact
oh, yeah.
that
yeah.
it is Fred's, and we just focus right in on June and her what? Reaction there, which the others, you know, they kind of maybe get a hint of what's going on, but you can
not
tell
to
that,
the
that,
degree.
That they're not really getting how this is hitting June. Ooh. And I think, you know, what is going through her head is that, you know, how close did she come to oh. being pregnant to Fred if he all along, he's not infertile. Like, I was reading that as June just reeling with, you know, how close she came.
Well, that too, but I thought it was more, then what was the point of all of it if they could have kids anyway? Mm. Like, that was how, like, it was like a bigger, what was the fucking point?
Yeah.
I went through all of that. And they could have children as well. But that too, yeah, I think it was all just in there. For me, it was just like, you built this world because you couldn't have children.
I read that actually more as just unbridled anger in that, because she's talked about, you know, she wants to make them hurt as she hurt. Yeah. And she's particularly focused on Serena and getting back at Serena, right? And so what I read it, what was going through her mind in that moment was that June was thinking, you are going to have a baby and you're going to keep your baby here in Canada when I lost my baby and my baby's still in Gilead. What the fuck? Mm. Like I just saw the, you know, wheels of anger and revenge sort of turning in her head there, which we kind of see play out when she goes to see Serena, right? That's what I kind of read from that. But the interesting thing in that scene as well is she calls Fred the commander.
Yeah,
yes.
Nice.
You know? Yeah. And she does, yes. She calls Serena Serena. And this whole sort of laser focus on Serena and revenge at Serena is interesting because she's not even talking about Fred and she doesn't go to see Fred and yell at Fred. And I wonder if this is another layer of how the show in Gilead, you know, we blame women more than the men. We absolve men of responsibility. And is June now playing into this in targeting her anger and revenge at Serena?
It's funny because it reminds me of one of the previous seasons, and it was after Nicole gets given to Emily. I think it is, correct me if I'm wrong, but there was a showdown in the Waterford living room, and there is Fred, there's Nick, there is Serena, there is June. Mm-hmm. And Fred's trying to get angry. He's trying to like insert himself. And I remember at the time that like June just went straight up to Serena and talked to her. And Fred was just like no one.
You know? Yeah.
Like, you know, Serena was a person who she was talking to, who they were like communicating about, like Nicole. And Fred just didn't matter. Like he was just a nobody.
Yeah.
But in terms of it was weird that she called him the commander. Yeah. And I'm also hating that he keeps calling her Offred.
Oh my God. Yes. 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 Oh, gross.
I mean, because she's of Joseph if she's anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I did think about like, why is she not considering Fred in this equation? And partly it's because Fred is so pathetic and who cares, right? But I think also it's, you know, a greater betrayal when it's from a woman doing what she did to another woman, like, you know, the sisterhood kind of thing. But then again, I'm like, hang on, that's still absolving the men of their responsibility. So there's all these sort of thoughts I was like floating through in my head watching that play out.
So many layers in there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because they also, you know, had some shaky, but alliances, they had their moments of, you know, there was that whole episode where they were getting shit done when Fred was out of action. You know, they had moments where Serena was so close to being on her side and, you know, Serena handed over Nicole as well. Mm. Yeah. So they've always had this quasi-alliance, but, you know, underpinned by this completely out of whack power imbalance.
I do think it is unfair the way June is channeling all of her hatred of Gilead and her experience there into Serena. Because as much as Serena has done horrible things and been, you know, that close to June throughout her experience in Gilead, she isn't responsible for everything and shouldn't be.
I mean, she was, you know, an intellectual powerhouse behind the idea of Gilead,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, she was one of the crucial people who sort of got Gilead into being, you know, like she had written books about it. And I think this is one thing that I really wanted to see was that there was a background shot when June was talking to Twello and you could see that he had his boards up and it had pictures of Serena.
I screen capped that straight away.
Fred is on that whiteboard. Nick is on that whiteboard.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Lawrence has had just as much to do with it as Serena. So,
yeah. I pressed pause and I was trying to read it, but it was a little bit blurry, but I did see that they had Serena's book there as well. Yep. So I think that like June has a whole lot of personal reasons to be channeling this anger towards Serena, but also, you know, Serena isn't just a commander's wife. She also was someone who was hugely like integral in the making of Gilead. Mm. So I'm kind of like, yeah, she deserves it.
yeah. So it is all in there. That's funny. We all have different takes on what do you think that reaction is with June at the drinks?
I thought they all were aware that Serena was going to be a trigger point for her and that didn't really want to talk about it, you know, because who knows what would happen. They didn't want to trigger anything. And it is, it's kind of, and I was so tense in that scene. I was oh my God, don't talk about Serena. Yeah. Like, she can't handle this.
Yeah.
Especially like how on earth, like it's one thing to have, like if we think of Serena as her abuser and she has finally escaped her abuser and now she's sort of like, she asked the question, so have we heard anything about Serena? And then there are so many like loyalties, you know, like the fact that Rita had actually seen her and why, you know, and why did you see her and what did she want? And I'm like, oh, this is awkward.
The way she looks in, like that's the big eyes and
Yes. Like, I'm like, don't trust June.
She's getting that look about her. Yes. But I do love that they break the tension by saying how bad Serena looked. And like, she looked like shit. That was a very friends having a drink kind of a moment. So. Yeah,
but good. Oh my God, she has looked like shit this whole season. Yeah. Like, her hair is deliberately greasy in every scene we've seen her in.
Yeah. She gets a little quaffed in this one, though. She's had a little blow wave when she goes to reunite with Fred, shall we say. Yeah.
Did you notice they made a point about Serena's bun?
No.
And, how it was like a rat's nest or something like that, which came back at the end when June had her hair in a tight bun during that whole last scene. And there was definitely a connection being drawn there.
Because I was like, Serena hasn't worn her hair in a bun the whole time. As soon as she got out of Gilead, she just let that go. Her hair is out.
And on the opposite, like actually June had her hair in a bun throughout this episode. And I was noticing that. And I was like, that's weird, because I feel like whenever we saw her shed her handmaidenness, you know, at various points in previous seasons, we would see her with her hair out, right? Like when she was on the run or when she was, not this season, previous seasons I'm talking about. Yep. I have seen her with her hair out.
Yeah.
And that sort of signifies she is out of the strictures of the handmaid's garb. But here, she's very, like, her hair is in a neat bun the whole way through. And I'm like, let your hair down, girl. You're free.
Well, this whole episode is playing with this role reversal of Serena and June. You know, June is becoming Serena throughout this episode. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's solidified in that final monologue.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, yeah, we'll culminate on that monologue. It's amazing. One good thing, though, off the dinner, Moira spots Una. She's leaving a present for June. As
you do.
Sorry, I nearly killed you.
Sorry, I nearly killed you. What do you buy for that?
What was in the bag? Oh,
is there a pre-made card?
I think we all thought Una would be out of the show after last episode. Yeah. So it's actually nice to see her
back. It is good.
And I feel like I've maybe too heavily judged her actions in last episode
But even we were saying, like, you know, we understand her points.
Yeah.
It's just we side with Moira. Yeah.
And it's good to get an update on Sarah, you know, like the fact that they brought in an intelligence asset means they are not totally screwed forever, but they definitely can't go into Gilead anymore.
Yeah. So that's good because, you know, Moira did risk her relationship for June last episode. You know, it was
And clearly relationships are a really big deal for them, you know? Like getting intimacy back in their lives again is huge. And so so I was so happy for Moira that she had found love again. I was like, yes. And then the episode on the boat where their relationship broke down, I was like, we didn't really talk about it, but I was a little quietly devastated for her. I just thought, wow, the price of getting a friend back, you've really had to give up on love.
Yeah.
And so I was very happy.
It was a great scene. Yeah, because Moira hid it. You know, she shielded it last episode. There was that look and just the slight sunken face when Una walked straight through and ignored her. And June acknowledges here, like, you know, I fucked that up for you. But great scene between Moira and Una. And when she brings up Odette, you know, the fact that she thought it was forever until it wasn't. That was gorgeous. Yeah. See, they're all in conversation. Back we've only had a small flashback of Odette back in the day.
And I guess that's kind of the gift of being in Canada now. I think one of the frustrations has been that because of being so in Gilead, these characters who we love Luke, we love Moira, and we love Emily, and we haven't been able to see them because of always being in Canada. So they're kind of like, they are important characters to us, but we only have ever gotten glimpses.
Mm.
So I'm just so relieved that we're getting a lot of Moira now. You know, I still want more Emily, but we're getting like a lot of Moira, and I'm so glad it's sort of filling in some blanks that we've had.
Yeah, and for Samira Wiley and Ochi Fagbenana, they get more range.
They can do this.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, the light and shade of their characters. Yeah, it's gorgeous. So, and that line, Moira, my God.
I just feel like maybe you could be forever.
Maybe.
Put that one on a t-shirt.
Yeah. Put that on a card.
Valentine's Day card.
100%.
That's called a lot of therapy, that is. That's what, that level of emotional growth and bravery. She's had a lot of talk therapy, I think.
Well, I think must have been last season, Natalie. I remember you said Moira always knows what to say. Like, it was when Luke was having trouble connecting with Nicole, Moira worked him through that and, like, knew what to say and knew how to get him there. But, yeah, I just remembered that line you said back then, because she does, even when she's trying to woo back her lady love. Mm. Yeah. So we've gone from that nice moment and let's just go on to the clashes across this one.
We should know this, shouldn't we? Handmaid's gives us something nice, then they take something else away.
Yeah, but, I mean, we love these stashes as well. So, okay, June brushes off some intimacy with Luke, that awkward moment, mm-hmm. and then can't sleep. Get Mr. Coconuts and Treason on the phone to take me to Serena.
And he's available anytime, by the way.
Yeah, I was like, does he sleep? Does he just sit and stand by all the time?
He's ready. He's ready to go.
Yeah, he is on call. Do you want to do this one, Heidi?
Oh, gosh. Where to start? I really enjoyed the way Serena kind of did that little pregnant saunter.
Yeah.
A pregnant saunter.
June came into the room. That's how I'm going to describe it. Definitely was. I didn't really know where this scene was going to go, and I think I actually had to re-watch this whole second part of this episode immediately after finishing the episode, because it was such a revelation for me, in a way, watching this scene play out and the role reversal of June and Serena, and what at face value looks like Serena making one last, you know, manipulative play at winning June's favor and, you know, failing abysmally. I'm going to be a little controversial.
Ooh, please bring it.
And say that I think there is a way to read this episode where everything Serena is doing is manipulative and pathological and fake and selfish. And I think it is truly selfish, but that scene earlier in the episode where Serena's in the chapel and she's praying and she's talking out loud, and Fiona, you read that as completely performative. I read that as the opposite. Mm. You know, we don't get to get inside Serena's head in this show. We don't get her inner monologue as we do June's. And so these little moments when she's not being observed or she doesn't think she's being observed are our opportunity to basically hear her inner monologue. And I think that moment where she is praying and asking for forgiveness and acknowledging to herself and to, you know, to her God that she has done wrong and she is seeking forgiveness. She does have regret. She's done horrible things, but there is this layer of this woman who somehow realizes that and is seeking some kind of forgiveness. And however manipulative she's trying to be in that scene with June to win her favor, to ultimately win her freedom in Canada and get, you know, access to Nicole, there is a layer of regret that I think is authentic there. And that is playing out in that scene.
Who wants to go first? On the chapel thing, I think I know Tuella comes in midway through. I think she's performing. It's performative for an audience of herself. Like, I think she is a holier than thou kind of a person. Mm. And I think it's, there might be a pang. Like, I don't think anyone in the show, I've said it before, no one's purely good. Yeah. No one's purely evil. It's everyone's light and shade. They're people. It's they write characters so well in this. So it's not that she's just bad to the bone. It's, yeah, sure, she feels bad, but also she feels bad because she got caught.
Well, yes, that, you know? Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think she's sorry, yes, and regretful, yes, because she's been caught and now she's trapped and now she's a prisoner. You know, if none of this had happened, I think she'd be carrying on feeling pretty self-righteous and mighty in Gilead.
Whereas I wonder, because I had the same feeling as you in that scene where in the chapel scene, I did think that we were sort of seeing a private moment of hers, but it's so shallow because she is shallow. And so I think that she is aware that she's done bad or wrong things. I think she's aware that she has things that she needs to ask forgiveness for, but it's a bit like the iceberg. You know, like she's only letting herself see the surface and there is a whole enormous iceberg underneath there that she just can't bring herself to look at. I think she's afraid. I think she knows on some level that if she looks at that, then it's going to completely destroy her sense of self. So instead, I think she knows that she should be sorry for something, but she's going nowhere near to the level of what she should be feeling.
Mm. There has been some kind of moral shift in her since arriving in Canada. Like, when this is the woman who wrote a book about a woman's place being in the home and as a wife, you know, procreating. And we get reminded of that book on the whiteboard layout. Yet in Canada, up until this point, she is now a woman willing to separate from her husband, and go out on her own as, you know, a single woman, that's
fine. I don't think she's changed. I think she's the same.
Yeah, I agree. Because women who write those kinds of books, I mean, they want that for the majority of women, not them. Like Serena, Serena really struggled in that role, being, you know, mute and not having her voice, right? Like she wanted to preach to what other women should be doing, but she wanted to be the intellectual powerhouse behind this movement.
She really assumed it was going to be different for her. By taking that stance in public, it gave her a public profile. It gave her a level of importance. It fed her self-esteem. It fed her narcissism. And then she just blindly thought that that would continue once Gilead started. And then she feels betrayed by Fred because Fred basically kicked her to the curb, you know?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
So I don't think that she's changed. And it's funny, I do kind of think that she is sort of pure evil in a way. And I think and the way that they show why she's different is because she doesn't look evil, because she looks the sort of character that is meant to be pretty and perfect and beautiful. And like when she was previously in Canada, a little girl said, "Are you a princess?"
Yeah.
You know, because she looks like a princess, you know. So we're used to like forgiving women who look like her or sound like her, and she's ticking all the boxes of like perfect woman, you know. So it's actually really hard to look at her and just see evil, but the evil is there. But it's actually just really hard. It's really hard to ascribe it to her, and that's the challenge that we have.
And this is why I think Tuella might be sometimes naive to, you know, her full range of capability.
Yeah.
As I said earlier.
The show is boring if she is a pure villain. It is interesting when she's got shades that bring her back from that. And it is even more interesting when the show puts June in that role, which it does in this episode.
Yeah.
I'm not bored if she's fully evil, but I get your point.
No one is purely evil and no one is purely good. But I love that this scene, it's the mirror with Fred. You know, she puts on the performative biblical references just as Fred was doing with her.
Yeah.
And remember, she said to him, "It's not your place to guess at the intentions of God." But June calls her on that and says, when she says, "I believe the Lord brought you here so that I could make amends."
Oh, yes, shut up, that's Serena. Why. Yeah, way to see it all through the lens of like, you know, this is all serving you and what you need to feel better.
Yeah, so it's the greatest hits of Serena back at her. So June, my God, she lets her have it. And I was thinking of the episode 4 where Moira tells Rita that Serena wants to see you. And remember Moira, she called it again. She said, "Being able to say your piece to her face, a lot of girls would kill for that kind of closure." So it was like, you know, Moira again called that one. But, yeah. Whew, what a speech.
Oh, my goodness.
What? I was going to say, it actually was probably amazing. And I say that as someone who thinks that, like, justice never looks like how you want it to look like.
Mm.
And considering all the crimes that have happened to June, being able to verbally say something to her face, just pales in comparison, you know, like it's just not the same. Like, so I kind of would have fully expected that to be quite dissatisfying, but actually it was amazing.
Yeah, totally. That was really gratifying, I think.
It was very cathartic.
So like the moment when Tuella shuts the door and says, "I'll leave you two alone." And what I'm curious to find out is, who were you actually worried for? It was like, "I'll just let this lion in and shut the door." Yeah. Good luck, Serena.
Bye.
Yeah.
And I mean, gosh, June, you know, June thinks the baby's going to die in her womb. Like that was...
Gosh, that was a line, wasn't it?
Oh, it was my cold. God.
"So that when he kills that baby inside your womb, you will feel a fraction of the pain that you caused us when you tore our children from our arms. Do you understand me?"
Ooh. It was so horrible.
Yeah.
She was being so horrible. It was
everything else
scary.
I was on board with, except for that line. Like I was like, "Yeah, you tell her. Do you understand me?" For everything else,
came right from where she felt it. Like it, you know, unfiltered.
Yeah.
You get to say
totally.
It. You say it. I don't know. Like that was what makes me just the rage. I think it's a combination of all the things we thought of knowing that Serena can have a child after all is.
But if June is to make Serena hurt as she has hurt, it means Serena's child needs to be taken from her, whether that's in death or whether that's, you know, removal, right? Like that is...
Well, because Serena should be in prison.
Well, yeah,
you know,
yeah. Like... But that is the essence of the revenge June seems to want to mete out.
Yeah.
For her child to leave her, which is awful, kind of understandable how why she's feeling that, but like awful, you know, it's so
it's
this is
awful.
It's awful. Yeah, yeah. But that's if she wants her
I'm
to
like,
hurt
no
she
baby
hurt.
Deserves Serena as a mother, but you yeah, know.
I know. This is like the tension, right? This is her moral failing going forward if she any better than the commanders and the wives then if she hopes
Man,
for the removal
moral
of
high ground sucks.
Yeah. I know.
I'm not judging her at all for that. That was like absolutely and then some.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's her first interaction ever since. They're on equal territory now.
I know.
Well, like they're not, like June's got the power now. So yeah.
It actually felt like Aunt Lydia. Like that was the conversation in the torture episode, episode three, when Lydia and June were having that each having a go at blaming each other and getting inside each other's heads, like this is all you, this is like all your fault. Yeah. And that was like felt like June got to have that moment with Serena, which is kind of like this is all you and this is all your fault. And I'm like, yeah, this is the woman that Gilead made.
Yeah. Mm. Like if you had to time over, you may. Self-edit, but just coming from the id, you know.
You might, yeah, maybe.
You know.
Oh, that was such a harsh line.
But also, yeah, it's Serena. What I loved as well, like she was spitty, you know, she wiped her chin and then walked out and then just polite tap at the door. Mm. She wasn't whacking it. It was very directed. It was to Serena and Serena only. I'd like to go now, please.
So this is now when...
Oh,
June
and then she
goes
gets
home.
Yes.
She's got a lot of rage.
And I was, this is what gets me. I was so happy for her. I love June. Like, I just thought, you know, she's got to Canada. She's not hiding away from Serena. She's not afraid to see her. She just goes straight over there. She just like confronts her and says her piece. And how powerful and amazing is that? And then she's decided that she's heard Emily and she's heard Moira and she's decided that she is not going to let the Serenas win. And she is going to get her life back. She's going to get her sex life back. And I was like, yes, like you go for it, you get it. And then she covered Luke's mouth with her hand. And I
while
was like,
saying, wait,
just like, what? What's happening now?
No.
This show's taking another dark turn.
Yeah.
Yeah, that scene was really hard to watch.
That wasn't it?
Visually, it was taking us right back to those scenes of the ceremony in previous seasons. Right down to the facial expressions on June's face and the angles of the camera. And, you know, and with that came, you know, brought back for me all of the emotions that those previous scenes carried. It was really difficult to watch. It was like she was possessed by some Serena Fred hybrid and taking it out on Luke.
Yeah, I feel devastated for Luke. I feel devastated for June, like you know, we talked about earlier. She's so fucked up. Like, can she repair herself and her mind after this? Like, she is so messed up after what's happened to her. And is Luke going to bear the brunt of that? I mean, he does in this scene, right?
I'm sort of seeing these shades of these, like, cycles of abuse. And she has been abused and she is almost passing on that abuse as a way to process it.
Basically, the writers are just like, you know, we wanted to feel one way about June, right? And they've compromised how we are able to feel about
it. Yes, I think
they've really
quite screwed
with us.
It's really controversial. Yeah. Like, because part of me was like, I just want to go back to episode 6 where I was just, yes, I cried all the way through it, but I was also really happy at the end.
Yeah.
And I think I wanted to live in that space for a lot longer. And this episode has sort of really ruined it because I'm now, like, I can't be happy for June now.
Yeah.
You know, I was so happy that she was in Canada and I was so happy that she was reuniting with her friends and her family and she was getting to say her piece and she was reclaiming her life. And then right in those last couple of minutes, it all just fell apart. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, I don't like where we are now.
Yeah. But I think it was quite realistic. Like, how, you know, yes, they've compromised how we can feel better, but I felt like it was kind of true to life. Like someone so traumatized, so abused, cycles abuse, like this felt like this could potentially be how things, you know, happened if this was real life. So I didn't think they were, you know, going off in some wacky direction at all. But it's interesting because, like, at the beginning of this season, episode 1, when June hands the knife to
Esther
and gets her to kill that man, you know, that could be like the first sense of like June being compromised. You know, she's involved in the death or involved in, you know, getting a child to kill someone. But we were all happy to forgive that because, like, these people are horrible and, you know, that man raped her and all the rest. I didn't feel conflicted about my feelings about June and that. Now here where Luke is, you know, totally innocent in this scene kind of thing. I do feel different. Like, you know, I do feel compromised about June, that she is compromised.
Yeah.
It's a tricky one. It's super tricky. And I was reeling so much from that that I kind of, like, I missed the monologue, you know, like I was trying to process the monologue, but internally I was still going, what? What? What's happening? You know, sort of like screaming to myself inside my brain. So I almost need, I don't know if anyone's got it written down, but I need to hear some of that monologue again. Thought, what are they doing?
It was really interesting because I watched it a couple of times, and I don't know if anyone else did this, but because I wanted to know very specifically, because they kept the camera on June for a lot of it, right? And I was like, I think where they're keeping the camera on June as she's saying these things about Serena tells us something about potentially where June is headed. So it's, she starts the monologue by saying of Serena, she's pathological, she's a sociopath, and the camera's still on June there. I don't necessarily think we're saying that June is going to turn out to be a sociopath, but as it goes on, it comes back, the camera comes back to June when she says that hatred and rage drives Serena.
Yeah.
And rage.
And that, you know, I think we're seeing that hatred and rage is sort of deriving some of June's actions here. And then the camera again comes back to her when she says of Serena, she'll do anything to get what she wants.
She'll do anything to get what she wants.
She'll lie to you.
Hurt you. Rape you.
And then she ends with, so if you feel yourself getting sucked in, run, run for your life.
Yeah,
and that 100%. Felt like a message to Serena, run for your life from June, because she is...
Not just to Serena, I don't think.
Well, yeah. Probably a broader message, but oh man, that was dead on June.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole monologue could be read as being about Serena or June, and by the end of that scene, you know, they've absolutely made that point. And I think there's a few moments in this episode that some of which we've spoken about, you know, the mirroring of Serena in that fit of rage, the scene with Luke in the bedroom. And I think the other one that was noticeable for me was when Tuello asks her about her motives for organizing the Angels flight at the start. And her response isn't what you think it would be. It's not these children deserve to be with their families. These children, you know, needed to get out. It is purely that she wanted them to hurt the way that she had hurt. It is all about revenge and hatred as her driving motivation. And I think it's also notable that Serena is referred to as June's nemesis in the synopsis for this episode, because, you know, nemesis doesn't just, you know, mean like arch enemy or rival, but it also has connotations of a downfall. Like, you know, a nemesis is an agent of downfall. And we're getting some shades of what might be to come for June.
Yeah. A few.
It's all in here.
One other thing that was interesting. So the camera is on June when she says she is driven by hatred and rage, which, yes, it's telling us that that's probably what's driving June as well. But it goes back to Serena when June says, but below that, she's empty. There's nothing else. And I think that's very much how Serena operates. It's not June. And that's why the camera sort of flips back to Serena.
Yeah, no good call there. Yeah.
Love the show so much and I love June so much. Why have they done this?
It's true to life. It's, you know.
Now we're just stuck in this, like, so now I'm almost like fearful of what's going to happen in the next episode. What are we going to learn next? Where are they taking June? I mean,
there's a lot to talk about here, and why have they done this? Let's find out, because we are going to speak to the writer of this episode, who has worked and has addressed themes of survivors of trauma. So, you know, this is kind of her lane, her specialty. So it's going to be so fascinating. So, yes, do stick around for that episode.
It does seem clear that they do a lot of research to write this show. So there's clearly a plan. So, I'd love to find out.
My hope is that, you know, June starts to channel her rage and her anger about Gilead and Serena and everyone in more productive you know, avenues, rather than meeting it out on Luke and reckless behaviour, but we'll see.
Yeah. And yeah, with that end monologue and to Tuello, like, he did call it, like, it's not useful intel. By the end of it, she's just kind of name-checking all the terrible things that Serena is. That's, like, you notice he's not really taking notes in that scene.
Yeah.
That wall of images and notes, I did freeze frame it and take a screen grab, and I didn't pick up a lot. I couldn't quite get out the writing there, but, you know, questions about Serena, how far will she go to get her daughter back? It's there in big Sharpie. Powerfully angry is one of the expressions.
My question about that is, does Serena care about Nicole anymore now that she's now that she's pregnant?
Very good question.
Is she happy to let Nicole go?
I think so. I think all she wanted was a baby. I don't know how much time she had to, you know, actually establish a deep connection with Nicole. How attached did they ever get?
Well, yeah, I don't think, as June said, she's like a raging narcissist. Yeah. So can she actually love? So did she ever actually love Nicole, or did she actually just want Nicole? You know, and so now that she's pregnant, maybe she's like, does she care about Nicole anymore? Don't know.
That she's retreated back to Fred might be a sign that she doesn't.
Oh, by the way, Fred had a sick burn.
Yes,
it's like this pregnancy belongs to me just as much as Offred's belong to you.
Yeah.
Punchy.
Yes. So I guess we're in the lane of predictions here. Heidi, do you have something that's on your mind?
Actually, I don't really. I mean, like,
Well, for me, I just want to know what Lydia thinks of June getting out. I want to see her reaction of that.
Could Lydia come to Canada maybe for
everyone come over to Canada? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's all just up in the air now. We are in new territory.
Yeah.
Literally. Okay. Well, thanks for listening, I think.
What a trip that one
was.
Yeah,
right. We hope it helped.
Maybe we confused everyone more.
Maybe we need another episode with the writer, and we're going to have that. So, Ye Ling Chang. So, yes, do stick around for that episode. We're off to the supermarket to go and stare at the chips.
And the water.
And the water. Yeah, not the milk. I want to thank my co-hosts, Heidi Island, Sana Kadar, and Natalie Hambly. And thank you for listening. We love that you choose to watch this series along with us, and we'd love to know what you think of this one. Reach out on Twitter, and you can find me on Twitter at anythingbutfifi. Heidi, where can we find you?
At Heidi Island.
Natalie?
At Natalie Hambly.
Sana?
At Sana _ Kadar.
And do use the hashtag EyesOnGilead. It helps us find your tweets. Speaking of tweets, there's a lot now coming in.
It's great, but it was nice to know that it wasn't just us that cried our eyes out in the last episode.
Yeah.
Everyone did. So thank you for sharing all of that. I feel a lot better about it.
Yes, same. Yes, thank you for all the kind words about that. And while we have you, why not leave some feedback and give us a rating on your favourite podcast app?
I also just want to give a shout out to Nick for tweeting quite a long thread about the politics of aid and NGOs, for explaining some of that to us, because I called that out in the last episode. So that was really interesting to read and really helpful.
So we will be back to recap episode 8 when it drops. And new episodes of The Handmaid's Tale season 4 premiere every Wednesday on SBS On Demand and Thursday on SBS. And if you're watching on television, they premiere at 9:30 p.m. And if you speak other languages or know someone who does, SBS On Demand is also subtitling the series in simplified Chinese and Arabic. So for more Handmaid's coverage and for recommendations for other things to watch as you await the next episode, head to SBS Guide.
Now, look, it's some heavy stuff that we talk about that's covered in the show. So if any of the content discussed brings up something for you or for someone you know, just be aware that there is confidential counselling and resources and support available via 1800respect.org.au in Australia. It's a fantastic resource, so do seek it out.
Eyes on Gilead is produced by me, Fiona Williams, and edited and mixed by Jeremy Wilmot. Until next time, don't let the bastards grind you down.
You don't own me, I'm not your property, so take your dirty, filthy, stinking eyes off me.
Make sure you grab some of those really nice moisturizers from Pretty Long. Okay, I'm